Well, hello everyone out there in podcast land and NPR land. This is the Front Row Network, the podcast for people that actually like movies. And we are going to be talking about one of the biggest releases of the year. We're going to be doing a full disclosure on Star Wars Rise of Skywalker. We are excited about it. I'm excited about it. I'm your host, Craig. Joining me today are my brother, Scott McFarland.
Thank you for reminding me it's an NPR podcast. I will keep the swearing to a minimum.
Absolutely. Aaron McCabe.
I am so excited to be here and reduce my hangover from cats.
Was it a cat-tastrophe?
Oh, shut up.
And joining us for the first time in quite a while, it's Ethan Fant. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing very, very well. So the last full disclosure that we did, we actually tried something new. We did a quick, and actually, Aaron, it was when you did The Irishman. We did a quick non-spoiler sort of discussion review for people that want to figure out if they should actually go and sit in the theater and watch this movie. And then we will tell you when the spoilers will begin. So we're going to give our first impressions of this and try to make it as non-spoilery as possible. And I will go to Scott first because I expected you to not like this movie. And I wanted to see if that's right or not. Go.
I can't believe everyone died at the end.
That's not actually a spoiler. I feel like we
now, if you go back to the full disclosure on Last Jedi, you will know that I am a defender of Last Jedi. I think still, I'm not going to give a ranking later, maybe, but I still think Last Jedi is the best Star Wars film. Period, because it's not a Star Wars film, which is why I like it a lot. But I went in there expecting this to be a dumpster fire. I expected Abrams to basically just spend the entire movie retconning what happened. And luckily, really, it was only the first half an hour where he tried really hard to retcon things and then he just let it go. So once we get past the first little bit of the film where it's just bouncing back and forth and not really making any sense, it gets into being a good film again. So I actually did enjoy it. I think at the end of the day, if you go in there expecting to hate it, you're going to find ways to hate it. If you go in there expecting to just enjoy yourself for 2.5 hours, this isn't art. It's not an amazing film. It's not going to go down as the greatest thing ever, but it's a fun popcorn flick.
All right, Aaron.
I would agree with Scott that I think it's entertaining. It's fun. And I think everyone should give it a chance. I find as far as Star Wars films go, or at least with this trilogy, that all of the extended universe and the canon has really created almost a caste system for Star Wars fans. And so the more you know about Star Wars and its extended universe and its legends and everything, the more critical you're becoming of these films and the less enjoyment you're getting out of it. So the closer you are actually to the end of the spectrum where the least you know about Star Wars, I think the more you end up enjoying it and not clinging to some of those things that Scott has pointed to, like finding reasons to hate it. So I thought it was, I think it's fun. I wasn't a fan of The Last Jedi, although I recommended that movie to everybody too. So I say go for it. Pay that money, get that ticket, get that popcorn, and enjoy your 2.5 hours in the theater.
Yeah, absolutely. Ethan.
Yeah. I'd say it's probably the most Star Wars-y of any Star Wars film ever. And that begs the question whether or not that makes a good movie or not. So I left the theater kind of mixed about it. But that being said, I'd still recommend seeing it just because it does close the arc on not only this trilogy, but 9 movies. So if you don't see it, then you're kind of cheating yourself on that experience a little bit, but there certainly were things that could have been better, things that could have been worse. So it's fine. It was fine. It's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. It's all fine. I will echo what all of you said. I actually really, I did enjoy this movie quite a bit. And this whole question, it seemed to be going into the Rotten Tomato score coming out because, you know, Disney held this one close to the vest, much like Endgame. They didn't want a ton of spoilers, although there were some leaks online, and Scott will have to tell me later if those leaks were correct or not, because I never read them. But there were some leaks online. beforehand. But they really wanted this to be something where they can basically drop the reviews the same day that it's opening in theater, so you don't end up spoiling it for the fans. Because of that, I feel like it built up all this anticipation for the film. And of course, there's a lot of anticipation. It's the last of the Skywalker saga. And so when that Rotten Tomatoes score came out at like 53 initially and then moving up to 57, we've all discussed about how that's not necessarily the best way to judge a movie. But it certainly does make you question, like, oh, am I supposed to like this movie? And I think that there's a lot of valid criticism of this film. I will say that the number one thing all of my friends have messaged me immediately following leaving the theater is that it's a lot. And I mean a lot as in, like, there is a lot of stuff that's happening in this film, especially in the first 30 minutes where it's really hard to even try to catch your breath. But overall, I think you really hit the nail on the head, all of you, in the sense that if you are there to enjoy a Star Wars film, not necessarily dive completely deep into the canon, although it does give you some Easter eggs to that, I think you're going to really enjoy this film. If you go into it wanting to hate it or saying, oh, JJ's ruined it before you even get to the theater, then yeah, I do think you're going to find some things that are going to make you upset. I will say, I think all three of these individuals with me know that I was screaming upset about something that happens in this movie, but that didn't ruin it for me. That 20 seconds that I'll discuss later when we talk about spoilers is not going to ruin or change my perception of the entire film as a whole. I really did enjoy it. Is it my favorite of the new trilogy? I don't know. I think maybe I need some time before I can go to that. I would say I'm still a big Force Awakens defender, and I didn't really get Last Jedi, and maybe for the reason Scott mentioned, it's I have been a Star Wars fan through and through for so long, and it is probably the furthest away from a traditional Star Wars movie. I think there's a lot of good pieces in it as well, but this isn't a Last Jedi podcast; it's a Skywalker podcast. Any other comments before we jump into our spoilers? Any other non-spoiler things that you'd like to say? Scott?
Well, Kirk, yeah, I would just say you are of the family, you are the big Star Wars fan. If you know, I ancillarily enjoyed bits and pieces of Star Wars, but I was always a Star Trek guy, which is still the better franchise, just saying, especially when J.J. Abrams isn't in touch with it. But so I think that's another reason why after we got through all the somewhat world building of this, I enjoyed the movie more because – again, it wasn't overly like you had, as Aaron pointed out, you had to know all the legends in the background. Although there is one thing that happens in the first 2 seconds of the film where if you didn't know anything about legends, then you're going to be confused beyond belief. And I'm not even sure if it's canon anymore, but they definitely hit on some legend stuff there in the first 2 seconds of the film.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you're saying there. That's, you know, the whole... The fandom for Star Wars, people say there's no one that hates Star Wars more than Star Wars fans. And I think it's because there have been such a transition here. You know, they had these amazing films that were truly revolutionary. Going back and watching this whole series again, watching A New Hope, could you imagine being in a theater in 1977 and seeing that on the screen? Mm-hmm. It's just incredible. And then they have to wait so long between Return of the Jedi and Phantom Menace, around 20 years or so. And in that time, there was so many novels that were done. There was so much done as far as the extended universe that it really built this lore around Star Wars. And then the prequels happen, and they're disappointing. And then after the prequels happened, they move on from there, and you still have all this time in this vacuum where you're still getting more extended universe things. You're getting some really cool things on even Cartoon Network. Clone Wars was pretty popular, but then they sell to Disney. And it's like, I think that the fans immediately thought Disney is going to ruin this. And I'm a Disney defender, so I probably shouldn't speak to whether or not Disney quote unquote ruined Star Wars. But just as a fan, I will say that I really appreciated this trilogy. And I like what it did. I like the new characters it introduced. Rey is probably my favorite Star Wars character, period. In any of the franchises, I absolutely love her as a character. Kylo Ren, in this film in particular, finishes a complete arc. And I can't go into it until we get into spoilers, but it's, I loved it. So that's what I have to say about the fandom in general. Just hopefully people will give this movie a chance. If you have not gone to see it, I would definitely recommend that you do. It is something that I'd love to see in a theater, because I don't think it's going to hit the same when you're watching it on your screen at home, just because it is such an action-packed film. And so hopefully you can go and enjoy it. Any last second things before we hit into spoiler territory? Let's All right. This is it. If you have not seen Skywalker yet, please stop this podcast, pause it, go watch it in the theater, come right out while you're yelling in your car or you're overjoyed in your car. Listen to us. Because we're going to go into spoilers in 3, 2, 1.
Palpatine dies again, maybe? Until 20 years from now when...
Yeah, I can't. Not.
All right. Now I feel so, like we can really get into this thing. So there's a couple of different ways that we can go about this, but I think the most interesting way that we can do it is to talk about individual storylines that we enjoyed or that we didn't enjoy. And kind of go from there, because that will help us talk about some scenes that we liked. And then also we, of course, will end the podcast with things that didn't work for us. But let's talk about some different characters and their storylines and how it went from there. Our two leads throughout this entire trilogy has been Rey and Kylo, or Ben Solo. And so let's go ahead and start with Rey in this film. Aaron, do you want to start us off with how you felt Rey's arc was? How it capped off everything that came before it, and also in this particular movie.
You know, I agree with you as far as Rey goes. She is my favorite character of this trilogy. I think there is a part of me that is obviously attached to Princess Leia. Like, that's who I grew up with. But I loved Rey. And I loved her particularly in this movie, but I've enjoyed her throughout all three movies. I think her character remained incredibly consistent, even with, you know, J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson. There was nothing like really erratic with her and her character or her story arc. What I loved about Rey, and what I especially loved in this movie, is that They didn't hide where Rey was from. They didn't hide her, you know, they didn't hide the anger and some of the frustration she had in the first film and how that affected her. And not only did her, you know, I guess bloodline or background as being a Palpatine affected her, and that she struggled with the darkness of the Force, the dark side, which I think is relatable. You know, to a lot of people, but that she continued to choose the lightened path. What I loved about Rey is that Rey continued to show that she was unwaveringly fierce as well as unwaveringly compassionate. She chose to wield her power in a way that was reflective of what she truly wanted, not what others wanted of her. And so, yeah. I mean, I think that's an amazing story. And one of the other things I loved about her too is that even though, you know, one of the big plot points of The Last Jedi was the Jedi need to be destroyed. This institution needs to be crushed. She took those books. And I know how you feel, Scott. She took those books with her. And so what I think she showed with that, or what the pivot point of that plot point was not the, oh no, the Jedi's don't need to be destroyed. I think what she showed by using that was that the institution needs to evolve, but there's still things I can learn from it and carry forth with me as I move forward in my next adventure or journey.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you really did a great summation there of everything that's going on with Rey in this film. But Ethan, talk to us a bit about how you feel Rey's arc was in the film, particular moments that you enjoyed, others that maybe you didn't, along with that character.
Sure. So I guess just as a caveat, I liked both The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi and everything that came along with. So clearly there was a deviation from The Last Jedi as to where Rey was going to go a little bit. And I think, so outside of like her becoming a Palpatine, which we can discuss later, her and Kylo's relationship has been the core of the series the entire time. And while they've been like force timing each other in these last two movies, all that sort of stuff's been really great. All those new force powers that have been introduced, I thought have been fine. Overall, I think her story arc has been really good. I think Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver have both been fantastic in all of these movies. I do think at the end, when she decides to take the name of Skywalker, that kind of ends her arc. I think that would have actually been way more effective had she been nothing and then chose her own family instead of like renouncing her family name that was just thrust upon her and then taking the Skywalker mantle. Like that would have felt more earned to me, but overall, yeah, Rey and Kylo both, I love both of those characters and, I'm going to miss them.
Yeah. Let's talk about that because I think that that's one of the major points of contention. And actually it's something that, Scott, I'm going to let you talk about it. And I'll let you get back to what else you want to say about Rey. But you had said that one of the things you loved about Last Jedi, and I think one of the things I appreciated about Last Jedi a lot too, was this fact that it didn't need to be so tied to families. There didn't need to be these particular bloodlines that would allow you to be a Jedi or to be Sith, because you don't necessarily need that. It doesn't need to be midichlorians. It doesn't need to be bloodlines. It can just be that this girl has tremendous power with the Force, right? And so, for one, I don't really think it added anything to the story that she was a Palpatine. But Scott, I want to get your opinion on all of this because obviously that was one of the major plot points of this movie, and it was something that you were hoping wouldn't happen. So I wanted to see your thoughts.
Well, you mentioned you're a Disney defender. I'm going to defend Disney on this too. It's not Disney's fault. And the theme I'm going to have throughout this conversation is, this is what happens when you don't plan out an arc of a franchise, when you go in knowing you're going to do a trilogy. People will say, well, Lucas didn't have a plan for a New Hope, for Empire when he did New Hope. Of course not, but he had a plan for his prequels, love him or hate him. This, J.J. Abrams came in Force Awakens, and I like Force Awakens. I like all three of these films, better or worse. But he came in with a whole bunch of mystery boxes that he creates, because that's what J.J. Abrams does. He loves throwing out his mystery boxes. And so he had everyone wondering for 4 years who Rey's parents are, when in fact it never really should have mattered. And I actually think it was a detriment to Rey. I like Rey as a character. I don't know if she had as much development as she could have had, because instead of watching her develop as a person, we're sitting there for three movies, wondering who the heck she is, wherein it shouldn't have mattered. And we should have just gone along with her for the ride. Unfortunately, JJ set her up as being this mystery box. So when we get to Rise of Skywalker, he has to answer that question that should never have been asked. We didn't care who Luke's parents were in New Hope, because we knew 20 minutes in that conversation, oh, your dad was in the Clone Wars, Vader killed him. Okay, moving right along. Which means when we find out in Empire that Vader is Luke's dad, it's more impactful because we didn't expect that. We didn't see it coming. With this, it's like, oh, you're Palpatine's kid. For one, they throw it in randomly. It's like, oh, yep, you're Palpatine's grandkid. I guess Palpatine has sex, which is a whole nother disgusting thought.
we did the math, ugh. Tim and I, because we were like, oh, ooh, was he already?
It was
like,
when he was Empire.
Yeah, it was when he was the Emperor. It had to be.
This was not prequel she. This was return she. Well, not maybe New Hope she.
That's pretty frightening.
Yeah. So what I'm getting at here is, you're right. The Palpatine thing didn't need to happen. And in fact, I think it makes the character worthless, because instead of being about her, being about her growth, it's about, yep, you got the bloodline, so you got to do it. And you're the reason why. It's because your granddad did something that you're here. And the whole bloodline lineage thing just annoys the crap out of me for several reasons. One, we learned that her parents actually worked to protect her. And yes, you don't want to call yourself Rey Palpatine. It's like calling yourself Rey Hitler. But screw my parents. I'm just going to call myself a Skywalker at the end. It's just little stuff like that that they didn't need to do. You're strong with the Force. Palpatine felt you were strong with the Force when you were a kid, so he went after your parents and tried to kill him and tried to kill you. The end.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on all of those points. I will say that the one thing you both, Ethan and Scott, have brought up, like, she just got this name. Why would she disown it? I would just say that her father, who was Palpatine's son, he is the first one that disowned the name, right? I mean, he's the one that didn't want to be a Palpatine, essentially. So that's why he's hiding Rey. So I understand that portion of it. But I think that maybe it's because this was a rushed timeline. This to me really felt like it was two movies trying to put into one film. And I think that that's because JJ didn't have the second film, you know, so he only had two movies to tell what he probably wanted to say in a trilogy. And so I think that, in particular, like it seemed like the idea that Rey had such a strong Force power at this point, we needed to explain that. And to me, the easiest way to explain that, like, why can she do the lightning fingers? The only person we know that they can do that is Palpatine. So she's going to be a Palpatine. That's how I think that came about, more so than even answering just the question of who her parents were. But I totally agree with all of you that, well, and we haven't heard Aaron's opinion on it, so I don't know if I agree with her or not. But I agree with Ethan and Scott saying that it really didn't matter that she was a Palpatine. To me, it made no sense or no difference. You could have just said that she was really strong with the Force. Aaron, you want to jump in on this?
It didn't ruin it for me that she was a Palpatine. I understand the point that people have, or, you know, especially if they liked The Last Jedi, that whole, like, well, it doesn't matter who she is. So that, but like, when I think about it, it's like, I understand how, I guess, the directors decided this direction to go, to be like, well, we haven't seen a bloodline, or we haven't seen somebody come from, you know, the Sith bloodline. And so the way I interpreted that part of the story arc is, you know, just feeding into the theme that even if you come from something bad or something evil, also you ultimately have self-agency and choice over what you become, over who you become. And I took her decision to take the Skywalker name as more of a, not a totally crapping on, like, oh, forget it. You know, I was a Palpatine for 5 seconds and now I don't want that name. I took it more as an homage to more of like a legacy. Like, I'm carrying the Skywalker legacy with me, you know, as you continue to go on and as she evolves, what a Jedi means, that she's at least honoring the name as she moves forward, and more as the franchise's way to honor the Skywalker legacy and what the Skywalkers did, which is the whole reason, you know, those movies and everything, why we're here today in 2019 watching the film, these films.
Yeah, Scott?
We've talked about the Jedi for a bit, and, you know, Aaron alluded to the fact that I don't like the whole Jedi thing. Can anyone tell me, and you just kind of mentioned what the Skywalkers did. Mm-hmm. Can anyone tell me what the Jedi have done that's good ever in the 5,000 years that we have of timeline for Star Wars? Anybody?
I mean, I guess the general idea is they've kept the peace, right, for X amount of years.
No, they didn't. They gave us the Empire. And the
Jar Jar Binks gave us the Empire.
They let him speak. No. What I'm getting at here is, I think, and again, we're not rehashing the other film, but I think it would have been more interesting to see Rey become something else and move past this. Which, you know, we were all kind of conversating on our little chat about what the hell does Rise of Skywalker mean? What does this all mean? And it's kind of a cop-out that the Rise of Skywalker title comes from the last 2 seconds when she says, I'm a Skywalker now. Mm-hmm. And you could have came up with a better title for this.
Well, and don't forget that when she's coming together with Palpatine, all of the Jedi tell her to rise. Mm-hmm. And I did think that was a little, like, on the nose with the title. But, you know, I I don't want to focus too long on the Palpatine bloodline portion of Rey's story, because I did really enjoy Rey's arc as well. And I think that the reason why she does ultimately end up choosing Skywalker is because Luke and Leia have essentially stepped into that parental role for her throughout the films. I mean, she's obviously got a relationship with Leia. And breaking the fourth wall here for a second, did you all see the interview with Daisy Ridley where she said the one thing she regrets the most out of Force Awakens is that she wasn't playing, she was playing it cool with Carrie Fisher, that she wasn't like acting, you know, she was just like, because remember Daisy Ridley hadn't really done much of anything prior to Force Awakens. And so she was like trying to play it cool with Carrie Fisher instead of actually like experiencing being around with her and just like fangirling around her, which, you know.
I didn't see that interview, but I saw the one where she said she didn't have it any harder or easier than John Boyega being a, you know, young white girl in UK, but okay.
Well, let's not get into that.
Whoopsie.
thanks, Scott. I think that her relationship with Leia obviously has become very strong. And then Leia's the one that's actually teaching her about the Force and having her practice this amazing, cool obstacle throughout the film. And then also Luke, I mean, in Last Jedi, Luke provided her with such a valuable lesson. Even if it was a shortened amount of time, she really found herself in the Force because of Luke. And I think that that's to the benefit of Last Jedi. I mean, I think that they did a really good job of painting that relationship together. And so I think that's why we see them at the end. People have been asking, you know, why wasn't Adam Driver as Ben Solo there at the end? Because he should have been a Force ghost. But I think that they were trying. Again, it was a little bit on the nose. Paint that the Disney portion of this movie, that they really put it on the nose that she's becoming a Skywalker and that Luke and Leia are essentially her surrogate parents. But well, there's a lot more we can talk about with Rey. Scott, did you have something?
Just real quick, I think that's a missed opportunity with the Force Ghost thing. Not only should you, and as much as I hate the prequels, you should have had Hayden Christensen there as well too with them. So it would have been the full three generations of the Skywalkers. I think that was a huge missed opportunity. Obviously you had Adam Driver and you had Hayden Christensen because he did his voice work. So you could have shot him for, 30 seconds to put him in there. I think if you really want to tie up this 9 arc trilogy, that was a missed opportunity by JJ.
Al, at this point, you could have just CGI'd him and you didn't even need him.
They did that with Return and it was kind of creepy, but yeah, I think.
maybe he's not even dead. I'm not sure if anyone's dead anymore, no one based on these movies.
I will say this. I was thinking about it because I went back and watched the whole series up to this point. Whenever anyone falls into what appears to be a bottomless pit, they always live unless their name is Han Solo. He is the only one that actually stayed dead because everyone else that fell, Darth Maul, back, got cut in half. Cool. It's fine. Luke, obviously Luke, we saw him survive at the end of Empire, but he still fell in a pretty long, you know, pit of whatever. Mm-hmm. Also, why all these really long, tall pits of light? Like, why is that a thing
Star Wars,
in the
bro.
Universe? Is that just like architecture? Is that Imperial architecture? Anyway,
to say get off my lawn, aren't you?
And then Han Solo actually dies. But then in this movie, Kylo, as soon as Palpatine pushed him and threw him off, I was like, there's no way that he's actually dead. He's climbing up that thing right now.
Much like when Chewie blew up, did anyone actually think Ben was dead at that point?
No.
Because no one, I mean, did anyone actually think Chewie to be. Was dead?
I wanted Chewie to be dead so badly.
I thought Chewie was dead. I was in the theater like this.
Like, ironically.
I was like, I cannot believe they just killed him in the middle of the movie. This is so cold-blooded.
We've been talking about Legends a lot. And for those who don't know, Legends are the books and stuff that happened before Disney took over and they got wiped from canon. Ironically, in Legends, Chewie's the only one who does die. They blow up a moon that he's on.
Oh.
He's the only one who survives in this stuff.
Him and yeah. The Chewie thing, I never saw a second transport. So at the beginning, I thought that it would be something like they did some kind of bait and switch. I did just think that them saying like, oh, it's just a second transport was a little bit on the weak side with why he lived. I kind of agree with you though, Ethan. I feel like I love Chewie. I do. But we got to start, we saw some heroic send-offs for a lot of our people throughout this series. And really the only original character that's kind of part of the crew and alive other than the droids is Chewie. And so, you know, maybe the way that it was done, like him just blowing up in a transport and just being gone, that would have been really tough to endure. But at the same time, when I did see him back again, I was just kind of like, oh, where was that? Well, second transport? That kinda, I kept trying to replay the scene in my head. Like, was there two transports? Anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Ethan. I'm sorry.
Like, that kind of speaks to the pace of the movie, too. Like, they gave us maybe 30 seconds before they're like, oh, just kidding. He's not
that. That's right.
By the end of the movie, you just forget that that happened. And then they do it two more times where people die and then don't really die.
Yeah.
But so, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm glad he didn't die because there's another scene we'll talk about that is the best scene of the film. But the second best scene in the film for me is Chewie dropping to his knees and just banging the ground when he realizes Leia's dead. That was amazingly done.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really, really well done. Aaron, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, like, they have this whole battle. Like, I actually really liked that scene where Rey and Ben are fighting over the transport. And they're both using their powers. And then she's got the Force lightning. So I immediately was like, okay, she's clearly has, you know, dark side abilities. But when it blew up, I thought it was like an amazing metaphor for like, this is what happens when you fight over power. It doesn't matter what side you're on. Look at what you've destroyed. And I was like, I mean, of course I was totally shocked, but also super impressed to be like, wow, they killed off a main character, a beloved character, and then showed us this example of the dangers of that. And then 30 seconds later, they're like, just kidding, he's back. I felt like Disney was kind of like, ah, oh, we can't do that. Bring him back.
I mean, I do wish that there was a little bit more passage of time before we realized Chewie was just alive and that does speak to the pace of the movie. I feel like I'm critiquing this movie an awful lot. I really enjoyed this film. I promise.
Sure you did.
And we're going to talk, I mean, I already talked about how much I loved Rey and her completion, her arc to me was really great because you did get to see her use the Force so much and she really became that true hero. But really more of that gray Jedi that Scott was after as well, because we even got a new lightsaber color, and I'm sure they're packing it in at Disney World right now. You can get Rey's yellow lightsaber here in just a little bit if you want to pay the $200. Scott?
In Legends, that makes her a Jedi Sentinel.
Oh, whoa.
Indeed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
I love how Scott's been, he's like, I know the least about Star Wars. I wasn't into the Star Wars movie, but he actually knows the most.
Well, see, here's the thing with me. The movies are hit or miss, but I love lore and world crafting. So all the ancillary crap that is really not needed, I am the guy you want in Trivial Pursuit. We'll just leave it that way.
Yeah.
We'd spend a lot of time on just a couple of characters here. So let's start talking about Ben Solo, Kylo Ren, who I think actually does have, in my mind, the best arc with the trilogy. Because he is this petulant child who gets mad and starts waving his lightsaber around and just like smashing a control panel in The Force Awakens. And then even him in Last Jedi, he removes the mask. He destroys the mask. He's moving on from that. He obviously kills Snoke, who is his leader at that point. And then in this, he makes that full turn. And you can start to see bits and pieces of Rey starting to reach Kylo Ren in Last Jedi. Of course, then at the end of Last Jedi, he tries to nuke Luke Skywalker. So you know that he's still that evil Kylo Ren. But then he does make the full turn to Ben Solo. He comes back. And in my mind, the best scene of the movie, and I know that this is probably what Scott was alluding to as well. That scene with Harrison Ford was so, so well done. And particularly the I know line. I mean, just crushed me. like him looking at him and just saying, "Dad," and then Harrison Ford saying, "I know." I wish I hadn't listened to Kevin Smith has been doing kind of his own thing here for like 6 months. So he just released a podcast and I turned it on literally right before I got to Skywalker, and he was talking about his experience going to the premiere. And he said Harrison Ford was there as an invited guest. And he said as an invited guest, but then I was like, oh, if Harrison Ford is at that premiere, he's in this movie. So that was the one thing, because I would not have known other than that. I don't think that leaked out there that he was going to be coming back as Han Solo for a bit. Mm-hmm. But it just, to me, was such an incredible scene. I absolutely loved that particular scene. Let's go to Scott first on this one.
Well, you said Rey had the best character arc throughout the trilogy. I disagree. Again, I like Rey a lot, but Ben had the best character arc.
Oh,
because going out of Force Awakens, I was one of the ones saying, I do not want to see his redemption. I want this bastard dead. I don't care about him. He's a whiny, petulant kid. He needs to be off. I do not want to see his redemption. But by the end of this film, I'm completely okay with his redemption. I think part of that is it's built throughout the trilogy. It's the one thing they actually do build throughout the trilogy. And, you know, they actually even point out that Palpatine's been playing him the whole time. And Palpatine's the one who makes him wear the mask again, trying to get him to go back to being, you know, his little tool and all of that. So that's played well as well. But when Han, even if it's a memory of Han, comes back and says, I'm okay with you being Ben again, it helps the audience realize, okay, we can forgive this guy. And I do like the fact that at the end of the day, he does, quote unquote, die for his sins, because he doesn't get to be redeemed for very long before he gets offed again. So without a pit this time. So he should be dead this time.
Now, I will correct you just a little bit. I said Rey was my favorite character, but I did say that Kylo Ren and Ben Solo, in my mind, was the best character arc.
Correct.
So those are the, just there. But Ethan, talk to me. You already mentioned you really enjoyed Adam Driver throughout this trilogy and throughout this film. But talk to me about Ben Solo.
Sure. I think it was handled as well as it could have been, given kind of the disjointedness of the trilogy itself. That scene does have like one of the revivals that I was talking about earlier, but that's like the one that I'm okay with in this movie. part of me is a little torn about Palpatine in this facet as well, because I think Palpatine kind of like being the puppet behind the scenes undermines a lot of what was happening with him in the first couple movies. And it kind of undermines his chance to be the ultimate villain of this trilogy. Throwing Palpatine back in kind of makes him the ultimate villain again. But that being said, redemption's always a hard thing with like war criminals, but I think that they did a really good job with getting us
fair
to
point.
Like him again. I think there's still the one scene we haven't talked about that I don't think any of us particularly enjoyed right before he does finally die, with the kiss. And that's, I think what that is supposed to be is like the entire world now, that's us forgiving Kylo Ren through Rey, which is like fine, I guess. I don't know. But like the fact saying that they had some sort of romantic connection when they were only in a room together for like 5 minutes is not going to do it for me necessarily.
Yeah.
She saw him shirtless.
She did, and was uncomfortable.
Maybe that was enough.
You know, okay. I can't.
Are we getting into this now? Are we talking about the kiss?
Yeah, sorry, I brought it up.
I can't believe I'm going to be the guy who defends this. First, let me say, the kiss was not needed. Flat out, it was not needed. But that being said, they hadn't been in the room. They hadn't been in a room together for only 5 minutes. That's completely, entirely not accurate to what actually we saw. Again, the one thing that actually this trilogy followed through with on all three films was the Ben story arc. And part of that story arc was he continued to have interactions with his better self in the form of Rey.
Yeah.
Every time he went really, really dark, he always ran into this girl who seemed to be better than him in everything he was doing without any training. He points it out in the forest fight in Force Awakens that she has had no training, but she's kicking his butt. And it frustrates him to no end that even though he's given himself over to the dark side the whole time, he continues not to get what he wants out of this, which is you know, whatever he wants. We still kind of question if he has a motivation. But so, and throughout Last Jedi, and I want to point out too, there are so many people, including some people on this chat, Craig, that had issues with the whole force projection. And now they're projecting lightsabers to each other, and no one's complaining about that. So when JJ does it, it's okay.
Hey, now it's part. It's part of the lore. I was thinking to myself in the theater. I was going, you know what? That whole scene with the water and the Death Star. They were trying to figure out how to get to the Death Star. I was like, Leia showed us all that you can just fly. So just fly over there, Rey. Anyway, sorry. No, let's talk about it. Because the kiss was, that was the moment where inside my head there was an explosion of anger for like a second or two. It just like screaming in my head because I didn't particularly mind that it was there. What I hated about it was that I knew that other people were going to use that as like the reason why this film is terrible. Is there going to be like, oh, this kiss happened. But I didn't see the romantic connection. I saw it much more as a sibling connection throughout the three films. That and that's why I almost, if she had ended up ultimately being someone related to a Skywalker, I would have been okay with that, because I feel like even Rian Johnson in his connection with her in Last Jedi, it was, to me, it was like stepbrother, stepsister for some reason. I never thought of it as romantic.
Star Wars has never had a problem with having siblings kiss before.
That is very true. That's very true. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it just didn't really feel like it was needed. I understand that he saved her life. I think that's amazing. And that was a great way to bring her back. But then I think it was also just like, in this film that has been pretty quickly paced, we get like a second before that kiss where it gives your brain just enough time to go like, they're not going to kiss, are they? And then they did. And so I think maybe over time I will come to terms with it, but that was the scene for me that just like, again, in this 2.5 hour long movie, there were 20 seconds that I absolutely hated. And that was that. I don't know. Maybe I'm just overreacting to it. Aaron or Ethan, you have thoughts?
Did I think it was necessary? No, I didn't. I definitely agree with Scott. I always felt they had an intense connection that couldn't be denied. And they fostered that relationship throughout the trilogy. I guess I felt the same way. And that's why I was poking fun at the scene in The Last Jedi is, even that scene pokes fun at, it's kind of like, hey, why do you not have a shirt on? Like, almost like, it just didn't feel romantic. And so to have them kiss did feel a little strange. I think for me, that scene, the kiss didn't bother me or anger me as much. What happened in that scene is they had this, you know, this battle, and then she heals him. She force heals him. He force heals her, and then they kiss, and then he passes out, and I started laughing. So you had 20 seconds of anger, and I start giggling in the theater, and my husband's like, you got to shut up. I'm like, what if they did this for the next 20 minutes? They just kept force healing each other, and then and this just went on.
Until someone came in and could heal.
Yeah, they just draw the curtain. They're like, and this is how it ends. Yeah. So I don't know. That's where my mind went with it.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
As much as I give J.J. Abrams crap for not being able to write a script, he actually did Chekhov's gun on that one. The first time she does a little force heal on the snake, she says, I gave a bit of my life for that. When she's completely dead, you assume he has to give all his life for her to come back. So they telegraphed that pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they did the healing beforehand. She heals Kylo before that too. So it does set it up.
People have had issues that I've read and seen with the force healing. And that's another part of Legends.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with any of the force powers. Like, to act like we know what the Force is like That's pretty right. arrogant. but, and like, you guys are right. Kylo and Rey definitely had a connection. I was just more saying like, for a romantic connection to like evolve naturally, I would need to like see them physically together. Obviously they had this immense Force connection the entire trilogy, but, and they were just not really like, step sister, step brother seems right. Like that's how I felt.
Have they ever come out and said timeline wise where this falls between Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker as well? Because there's obviously a good amount of time. I mean, the first time we see Rey in this movie, she has like, 30 boulders around her that she's levitating in the air with the Force. So obviously there's been a bit of time, right?
I think what I heard was like a year, but I could have been wrong about
JJ that. Said in the interview it's a year.
Wow.
So she's been training with Leia for a year.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, jeez, she's quite powerful in this film.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now let's move on to our other two supporting actors who, this is the first time that we actually had Rey, Poe, and Finn all in the same room together. And I just absolutely loved their chemistry. But let's talk about Finn and Poe. I enjoyed both of their arcs. I am one of those people that really enjoyed Finn coming out of Force Awakens. I thought that I wasn't a big fan of his arc in Last Jedi. And then this, to me, really brought him back around because it allowed John Boyega to be kind of that fun, hapless idiot throughout. And I really enjoyed that as a character. Scott, you had a visceral reaction to that. I just mean that whenever there's something going wrong, he doesn't ever seem to know what to do, but like in a good way.
Were you watching the same movie?
Yeah. Go ahead.
The hapless idiot was in Force Awakens. This is actually Finn actually being able to do things. He spends most of the movie trying to move the plot along by himself. He's the one who goes out on the second skim and tries to help her off the Death Star. He's the one doing all of that. So I think you're projecting what he was in the first film onto what he is now. And I think he's actually had some growth too. That being said, that was one of the things that frustrated me the most about this script writing. They need one more freaking edit on this script, at least one. But the whole, I have something to tell you. And then three times throughout the movie, they point out Finn has something to tell Rey. Now, JJ has come out in an interview and said he wanted to tell her that he had Force powers or Force ideas, whatever. That being said, that's not in the film. So wait a minute, your script well.
Well, I kind of liked that it was left unanswered. Although people were like, is he going to say that he loves her? Because again, that is a continuation from Force Awakens. And even when he first wakes up in Last Jedi, there's that scene where Poe says, Finn, you must have a million questions. And he just says, where's Rey? You know, but still that I understand all of that. And what I mean is that he's not necessarily the one that comes up with the plan, but he's the one that will go with the plan 100%. And he will get something done. So, yeah. So, Ethan, talk to me about Finn.
Yeah. I like Finn in this movie. I know why people didn't like him in The Last Jedi, and I know why he didn't like Last Jedi, because he was stuck on Canto Bight for the majority of the movie. But his character was a lot better this time. His chemistry with Poe was really good. I do like the whole thing with Rey. He was literally about to die and he reached out and like, I have to tell you something. That's not about him about to tell her that he has the Force. Like, that's not what that is. There's a 0% chance that's what that is. but the other weird thing was him and Rose. I guess that just kind of went away.
Rose was really sidelined in this movie for sure. And that is sad because Scott, you brought this up in our thread. So I'll let you take it away here in just a second. But you know, the fact that the fans were so hard on her meant that I feel like they should have done a much better job of being like, you know what? We don't care. Like, she's going to be in this film.
Right.
And so they kind of replaced her character with a couple of other characters throughout the film as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they tabled her a little more, or saw, but like Ben sidelined her.
I don't know that it, I don't know that that's why they sidelined her, but the fact that they did sideline her, it makes it very clear. I mean, she was already, she's the one that she famously had to leave Twitter and she went into counseling with all this. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that her character does nothing in this film is, that's not great. You know, I feel like they needed to give her considerably more to do. Scott?
Of all the things that upset me about retconning that they did, because obviously it's clear that JJ did not like, he's even said in interviews, he did not like how Last Jedi went. The only thing that truly frustrated me, even more so than the Palpatine lineage stuff, is that you take a character, whether you liked her or not, and you sidelined her because the fanboys said they didn't like her. And that's why they did it. You can't give me any other reason why she says, well, I have to stay back and look at the battle plans. Sure. She got sidelined because people didn't like her. And so JJ's like, well, I can't have her in my movie, but I also can't just wipe her out. So she gave, they gave most of what she could have been doing to the guy from Lost and, you know, Lord of the Rings. I'm blanking on his name right now. And do you know how he got in this movie? Not that he's bad, but do you know how he got in this film? He won a bet against JJ over a soccer match. And the bet was, if I win this bet, I get to be in your Star Wars movie.
Yeah, kind of. So, he was kind of a wasted character, too. He maybe had like five lines.
Well, he's in there to replace Rose.
Yeah.
Well, him and
that other character. But, yeah, I mean, regardless of Rose, to finish up on Finn real quick, it felt like his character was unfinished at the end, to a little bit. Like, I don't know what he wants or where he's going to go, or if he's, like, his emotions and his motivations, I don't really know where they are right now at the end of this trilogy. That probably goes with like how muddled it was to the three movies, but he just, I don't know where he is anymore.
And yeah. I wonder if that's intentional. Like, as this saga and this, or as Star Wars moves on, is that an intentional move so that they can, you know, do other things with these characters?
Yeah, and I mean, John Boyega did come out and say he's not going to be Disney Plus'd. He wants, if he was ever to come back to the character, he would want it to be a big screen adaptation. I will say, you know, people are questioning end of the Skywalker saga. I do still, there's a lot of stories out there potentially with Poe that I want to see, or with Finn, and they can involve Rey. You know, like I think that the Skywalker saga now, and this comes back to something that Ethan said a bit ago, that Palpatine is now the villain of this trilogy. Well, he's the villain of the prequels, he's the villain of the original, and he's the villain of this. Mm-hmm. So with the idea of the Skywalker saga being Luke's family story, the villain was always Palpatine. So I almost feel like, and again, maybe this is just because I love these movies, give us a few years from now, and you have a mission that involves Finn and Poe, and even Rey shows up. I don't know that I call that necessarily the Skywalker saga tied to these movies if it doesn't have those other components that come along with it.
Yeah.
But anyway, I really did enjoy Finn throughout this film, and I also really enjoyed Poe Dameron. I thought that Oscar Isaac did the best job of playing his character in this film. I liked him quite a bit more in this film than I did when he was doing the mutiny during Last Jedi, because we just hadn't seen enough of the arrogance, I guess, by the time we had seen those scenes in Last Jedi, that he was trying to essentially take over command of the ship. And now, I guess maybe because we had that mutiny scene, his arrogance is able to show through as much more of an asset in Skywalker. I enjoyed that aspect of it quite a bit. Aaron, your thoughts on Poe?
Poe was a character that I enjoyed consistently throughout. And not because he had some ridiculously powerful arc, but I just thought he was a consistent character, providing comic relief. He was just likable.
Yeah. Yeah. Ethan?
Yeah, same. I mean, Oscar Isaac's really great. Poe was really great the entire time. He was always, whoever he was interacting with, it felt like he had chemistry with. Didn't matter if he was a good guy or a bad guy. He's magnetic and he's great the whole time.
Yeah. Scott?
He is one of my favorite characters to come out of this this saga, because I do enjoy the scoundrel. I do enjoy, and they actually made him a scoundrel this time, which again, yeah, a little bit of retconning, but I'm okay with that retconning because he was hiding it from everybody. So I'm okay with that. But I do like the fact that he wasn't just a Han Solo, which he could have easily been the Han Solo. But starting in Force Awakens, they were able to make him into much more of a dynamic character. He's basically, and again, going back to Legends, he's basically Wedge Antilles from Rogue Squadron, which I appreciate because I really like the Rogue Squadron's books.
And Wedge Antilles in this movie.
Oh, yes, he is.
They really backed up a whole lot of money for that one because a couple of years ago he said in an interview, "I'll never do Star Wars again." Well, he was here. Uh-huh. But no, I really do enjoy Poe. Oh, yeah. What was that?
I just want to say, so I want to address or speak to the retconning. My perception of some of the retconning that you're referring to when they're talking about the character, Scott. And actually, that was one of the parts of the film I really loved, and I thought it tied into JJ's theme. I didn't feel like JJ was completely trying to retcon the story of it, his idea that it shouldn't matter where you come from. I actually enjoyed the pivot in this movie because to me it felt like a pivot to say, still, it doesn't matter where you come from. He was a spice runner, and this one was a scavenger, and this one was a stormtrooper. So they all have dirt. They all have baggage. And yet here they are all fighting for the same side, for the same morals, for the same justice. So I felt like that was more, I thought that that felt more like a respectful pivot to be like, I'm not going to totally say none of it matters, but I'm going to take that what matters and what doesn't and just kind of turn it a little bit.
I'm not going to argue with you on that at all. The one thing I also want to bring up about Poe, because I doubt we're going to talk about her as a side character, but I really did like Carrie Russell's character in this
too.
I love her. One of my favorite scenes from this is at the end when Poe's like, "Hey, you want to go? You want to go knock boots?"
Yeah,
and she's like, "No, I'm good. I'm sad." I was like, "That's awesome. I love that."
Yeah. Having played Destiny a lot a few years back, she looked like a character straight out of Destiny. And I loved it. I loved that. I do only want to maybe touch on one additional character, and then we can get to any other favorite scenes that we had, and then wrap up with things that didn't work for us. But I want to talk about Anthony Daniels, because C-3PO to me was such a charming character in this whole film. Of course, they kind of spoiled the fact that he was going to get a memory wipe or he was going to die or whatever in that trailer. But it was still, I thought, some of the best acting out of him in a long time. And it just allowed us to kind of marinate with that character. I really enjoyed his part of this film. We'll start with Ethan. Do you have any comments on C-3PO?
I do, yeah. I agree that he provided a great amount of comic relief in this film. And I think people forget this is the second time he's had his memory wiped. Like, this happened in between the prequels and the original trilogy. Again, one thing that I was looking for in this movie as a whole was like some sort of stakes. So like when these people are dying, like, I'm like, "Oh my God, they did it. They took a shot." And then they're like, "Oh, just kidding. We didn't." So outside of that, I think there was a lot of humor that was really great, but I felt, it felt cheap to me just because like I wanted there to be a little bit more intensity to go throughout the whole movie. But yeah, he's been great the whole time. C-3PO, love him. Glad he's still around.
They at least did set that up a little bit because they said, "Doesn't R2 have your memory backup?" And he said something like, "Well, R2 is always notoriously bad at backups," or something. Whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Aaron, thoughts on C-3PO?
I thought that they utilized him in a great way to really tie together that return to form of like Return of the Jedi, like the story of the three of them together and then with the droids. I really enjoyed him, just to piggyback on what everyone else is saying. I enjoyed his comic relief and how they got to, utilize him in all the different scenes. I wasn't trusting of the trailer when they kept showing that over and over again to be like, "Oh, I just want to take one last look at my friends." I was like, "I don't trust you guys with your carrot dangling. I don't think that." So I don't know.
I don't trust you guys with your Hulk on the battlefield at Wakanda.
Yeah.
I don't trust it anymore, Disney.
Yeah, I can't trust you, Disney.
Scott?
In the trailer, they should have flashed red herring. Even had red eyes. But this is the best C-3PO usage since Empire.
Oh, yeah.
He has some good stuff in Return, especially in Jabba's palace. But after that, he kind of gets sidelined from most of the movie. Yeah. He's on Endor and doing the god thing, but that's a couple fun little jokes. But this is the first time that C-3PO actually is involved in the plot movement. And he's given a lot to do. There's so much little easy jokes and fun little laugh points. Like when everyone's looking at him to shut him up right when they're going into the festival, and he looks behind him wondering who they're looking at, because he can't obviously be looking at me. It's just little humor like that is done so well here that hasn't been done in either of the other two of the new trilogy. This is the first time they used him well. Mm-hmm. I still think they did R2-D2 dirty. And the fact that he's not in this much at all is really frustrating. I love BB-8, and the new guy is kind of cute too, but R2-D2 got sidelined so much in this trilogy that it's upsetting that they didn't get the whole point of with Lucas was these are the two that kind of are the audience moving through these movies. And we never got to see C-3PO and R2-D2 together in this trilogy, really.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, a little bit at the beginning of, well, in Force Awakens, but that's when he's basically saying that R2-D2 has been in a low energy or low power mode for a long time when he's talking to BB-8 initially. Lots of other characters and side characters and things like that we could go into, but I think it's maybe time to talk some of our favorite scenes. And then that way we can start to wrap this thing up a little bit. But I'll start off. I really enjoyed there's a potentially a cheesiness aspect to Rey taking on Palpatine that, to me, the way that it was shot, the way that it was built up, it worked. And it didn't come off as corny. It didn't read as corny for me. Even the lines, "I am all the Sith, I am all the Jedi," you know, that in a way, if not done well, if not built up correctly, could come off as sort of, you know, questionable dialogue, right? But I absolutely loved and was thrilled to hear all of the voices, because of course you hear all the Sith at the very beginning when Kylo's coming into to see Palpatine the very first time, and in literally in the first 2 seconds of the movie, like Scott said. Now you're hearing all of the Jedi. You hear Mace Windu, and you hear Yoda, and you hear Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, and you hear even Kanan from Rebels, and just all of these like different Jedi that you hear move her forward. And I thought that was so cool. I was just like in nerd heaven during that scene. But I'll let you all talk other scenes that you've really enjoyed. We'll let our guest go first, Ethan. Any scene in particular you want to call out?
Well, for me, I think we've talked about it. The best scene for me was when they were on Endor, right? On the relics of the Death Star. That whole sequence was pretty great. Not only the action and like the setting, but also then the emotion of Ben with Han and Leia and Rey there as well. That was all really great. I think that was, and I also got chills when every single ship that's ever been part of the Rebellion or Resistance showed up. Mm-hmm. That gave me chills too. I like that.
Was that hurt a little bit, do you think, by the fact that Endgame just came out? Because that was the one thing. When Lando shows up, it was a little bit like on your left.
It was even over the intercom.
Yes.
It was even over the intercom. We didn't talk about Lando. So if you guys want to talk about Lando, I can't believe I forgot him.
Lando, great again. Billy Dee Williams still got it. Still super charming. I think they used him effectively in this movie. I don't think it was like overly fan service-y or overly cheesy at all. I think he did a good job.
He actually had a purpose.
Yeah, exactly. To your point about Endgame, I think this whole whole last scene was basically like J.J. Abrams building his own like level in a Star Wars video game, being like, here's what I want. I want 1,000 Star Destroyers attached to Death Stars fighting every single person that's ever been alive fighting for the rebellion. Go. Which, like, I like video games, and that can be fun. So, anyway, yeah, I'd have to say my favorite scene was the one on Endor.
Yeah, it was so cool to see them in that setting, like in the setting that you were the last time we were in that room was Return of the Jedi, and seeing Luke and Vader and Palpatine all there, and you see the chair even. I mean, just remarkable, and call that fan service, that's fine, but just remarkable use of the history in that set piece for all of us that have went on this journey and followed these heroes. It was really cool to see that in particular. I love that Death Star bit for sure. Although again, I thought that the waves were kind of weird. You could just fly just like Leia did. Fly.
Maybe maybe only Leia can do it. It's the Force, you know.
That's we don't true. Know. That is true. Only Leia can do it. Aaron, any favorite scenes you want to mention?
I mean, they did such a great job giving everyone send-offs. I had verbalized this before with this trilogy. You knew that it was taking all these characters. They were coming to a close, like the characters you got to know and fall in love with. And so, like, you've got to move on from them. And so for me, with The Last Jedi, when that hit, I had, you know, verbalized to other people, like, this was feeling to me like, this is a botched life support withdrawal. Like, I don't know where this is going to go. Now I just kind of want it over with. Like, but I thought that in this job, they just gave everyone really beautiful send-offs. You know, the last time you see Han is this super meaningful moment. Leia, they had little footage. I didn't know how or what they were going to do. I know that there's been complaints or criticisms about how kind of it's just like, oh, Leia, she thought of Ben and then she just disappeared. Someone was like, what's with all the Skywalkers just using? Yeah. Yeah. Like, so I just, but like, what else could you do with the story?
No, I thought that was great. They did a great job with Leia, given what they had.
They didn't have a lot to work with. I thought they did a great job honoring her character, honoring Luke at the end, you know, him as a Force ghost and everybody. So by the time the movie was like winding up, I had used a lot of napkins and I had just gotten done with a cold. And so by the time we were walking out of the theater, my husband was like, oh, how is your nose? Your eyes. He's like, there's so many tears coming out of your eyes. Very concerned. I felt a lot of emotions. And I think the way that they built it up towards the end and then let it gently land, I just thought it was really well done.
Yeah.
Bringing that
part of that could, part of those tears could be that you were seeing Cats in the same weekend, but that's another
thing. It was going to happen. I knew. Yes, exactly.
yeah. You know, I've heard, some people talk or some criticism of the way that they used, the footage from Force Awakens and that the dialogue kind of seemed contrived. But the thing is, like, you only had, I thought it was a really cool way to, have the character live on. She doesn't just die off screen because that's what happened in real life. To me, yeah, there were bits that seemed clunky just because there's not that actual interaction between, say, Rey and Leia saying these lines, because Rey is saying these lines essentially to what amounts to old footage, right? Of Carrie Fisher saying these lines. But I thought that it was really well done. And and call me dumb because I am, but like when they first said we're going to use scenes cut from Force Awakens, I was like, oh, so they're just going to like whatever scene they filmed in Force Awakens. Like I didn't even think in my mind that like they could like cut her out of that. It, guys, this is, my brain wasn't working very well. I see Scott giving me some faces. I see Ethan laughing at me. See if you're ever invited on this podcast again, young sir. But no, I thought it was a really well done way to use the footage that they had and to end Carrie's story here, because just obviously tragedy struck even before we got to see Last Jedi, you know? So it really was great. Send off. Scott, favorite scenes, anything that we haven't mentioned yet?
I let you make the joke the first time without going off. Then you made the joke the second time. So we're, again, I want to be clear here. We're okay with people being able to heal people. We're okay with people being able to teleport lightsabers across the distance to each other. But when somebody can hold their breath for 5 seconds and force pull themselves back into a ship, that's the bridge too far. That's it. That's what happened. She held her breath and she force pulled herself. So instead of pulling something to her, she pulled something back to her, back to it.
In that fairness, was really difficult for you to understand. The bear. I knew I was.
That was really difficult for you to get, but you can get the whole. Oh, I got a lightsaber behind my back. Hey,
you know what? To speak to that, Scott, I really hated that scene in The Last Jedi very much. The zombie Carrie Fisher, Mary Poppins. However, when I saw that, you know, they made a point to say, like, hey, she had Jedi training, I was like, oh, okay, I will eat my hat on that. So it made a lot of sense to see that, right? And if someone who doesn't have the Legends background or the canon background, to see that, it was like, okay, so she was a fully trained Jedi. She wasn't just walking around being a diplomat. So if that happened, like, okay, fine.
Well, and I don't remember if there's ever a line in the original trilogy. Probably not, but I'm just kind of mingling Legends in the trilogy now. But it's made pretty clear somewhere that she's a stronger connection to the Force than Luke is. Like, she was supposed to be the chosen one, but Luke got there first. So I've never had a problem with that. But so going back to the original question, now that we're calling Craig dumb and we're moving on, I like the small character bits. I really did. Obviously, we've talked the Han Ben thing to death. I actually really liked Lando's introduction because it's something that, you know, he didn't just get forced in like some of the other original characters did. It was like, hey, I've been on this planet for a while, just kind of hanging out. Luke left me here. He's a dick, but I'm still here. It's great. But also like the character bits between Finn and I think her name is Jan or Jen. I'm blanking on her name right now. The former stormtrooper. And just the little bits with her. Yeah. And then also she got a bit with Lando at the end too, like going off on another adventure to find out who she is. So, I mean, the little character pieces, they do well. I also like the fact that, you know, going back to the scenes we've already talked about, they have made my favorite series of games canon now, Knights of the Old Republic, because, you know, you mentioned all the ships that have ever fought the Republic. The Ebon Hawk is in the background right there, and that ship is 4,000 years old. But it's still there. But also, Jennifer Hale, I mentioned this on our chat room, she did the voice to Bastila, which is a Jedi in Knights of the Republic, and she is credited for Rise of Skywalker now. So it was – she actually did another character in Rebels, but I'm going to say she's Bastila. She also is Commander Shepard in Mass Effect, so Commander Shepard's part of Star Wars now too. If you do the female Commander Shepard – that's Jennifer Hale.
I don't know
that's if my awesome.
Sister's ever done the female Commander Shepard.
You should, if you've done Mass Effect, Aaron, you really should, because she actually is a better voice actor than the guy who did the male voice. So it's a better experience if you use the female Shepard.
He's always trying to get me to play that, so maybe I'll have to contemplate that.
Mass Effect is my favorite franchise, film, game, whatever. I love Mass Effect.
I have a hoodie that I got for Christmas from my husband.
N7?
N7. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got it. You're an N7? Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, back to Star Wars. So we're going to start to wrap this thing up. Any final thoughts on the Skywalker saga coming to a close here? I do feel like it, again, I enjoyed this film. I thought that it did a good job of tying up a lot of storylines. It did leave some things open, which I'm totally fine with. Because even if we don't get other movies, we are still getting things like the Marvel comics. We're getting more and more novels. They're really starting to rebuild that extended universe. And so maybe we do get more adventures of Poe and Finn in those. And they can live on through those. But if we're looking at these all as the 9 films, and then you can include or not include the 2 anthology films. Just a remarkable amount of sci-fi joy that came out of these 42 years since Star Wars came out. It's pretty incredible. I never lived in a world without Star Wars, and it's really cool to see all of this wrap up, which is why I can't buy into the people that feel like they're going to hate it. So they're going to go in thinking they're going to hate it, because we just got to understand that like, this truly is an epic piece of cinema and storytelling that is now coming to a close. At least this chapter of it. And, I'm really happy with how it all ended up. There's bits and pieces here and there. There's critiques that I've made on this podcast, but this is just a really enjoyable film. To me, this film feels the most like the original trilogy of all of the sequel, because it really feels, it has a very Return of the Jedi feel to it. And just the action is fun. The dialogue is witty and fun again. And, which was kind of lacking in, like, say, the prequels. I think that that's what makes the prequels harder to go back and watch, is that they don't have that witty banter and that fun that is associated with Star Wars that this film had. I just overall really, really appreciated this franchise, this saga, and this particular trilogy. Really enjoyed it. I can't wait for watching it for years and years and years and years on Disney Plus. So we'll go with Scott first. Any final thoughts?
Well, again, I will preface this by saying I liked all three of the new trilogy. They're not like amazing films. I'm not going to go back and watch them 100 different times, but they're all three in their own way good films. That being said, this is a cautionary tale of how not to treat a franchise. Because when Lucasfilm went over to Disney and Kathleen Kennedy moved over to Disney with it, and JJ became the first executive producer and the first director, they should never have written word one of Force Awakens onto a script until they had a plan for the entire trilogy. Because then you could have mapped out this Palpatine piece. You could have mapped out every little thing to where it would have made sense. And then no one would be complaining about how Rian Johnson messed things up in the middle, because they wouldn't have allowed it. Now, would that have made Last Jedi probably a worse film, in my opinion? Potentially. But it would have made a better film for the trilogy. And then we wouldn't feel, we've all said that the pacing on this film is rushed, especially in the first part of it. That's because it's two movies in one, mm-hmm. because JJ is having to make up for a movie he didn't get. Mm-hmm. So he's spending the first part of the movie trying to spin his own yarn again, and then he kind of is able to finish it and do it well. So I think we would have had a much better experience, and it wouldn't be 58% on Rotten Tomatoes, and they wouldn't be gradually making less and less money every time they put out a trilogy film if they had just mapped this thing out. So I'm hoping, and I've already kind of seen it, there's been a little bit of back and forth between Kathleen Kennedy and Bob Iger on different interviews, because Kathleen Kennedy came out and said, we're not going to do trilogies anymore. We're just going to do one movie at a time, and we're just going to do one story at a time. And Bob Iger said on the red carpet for the premiere, is like, I don't know if that's true or not. We're going to see how things work, and then we will build from there. But they've already announced the next three Star Wars dates. It's December 2022, December 2024, and December 2026.
Wow.
So read into that how you will. I think it's going to be a Knights of the Old Republic trilogy. But Disney's moving forward with this stuff. And I hope if they're going to keep the Lucasfilm folks as they are, which it seems like they are because they just gave Kathleen Kennedy an extension on her contract, that she learns her lesson, and Bob Iger and whoever the CEO is going to be of Disney coming next year, the year after, sits down with them and says, if we're going to do this again, we're going to do it right. Because they didn't do it right this time.
Aaron.
Okay, two things. First thing being, there's a lot of people who are coming out of the film and they're saying, well, I didn't like this, and this didn't make sense, and I didn't like this, and I didn't like this. And so one of the questions I pose to people who are kind of already programmed to go into a film, especially with Star Wars, to look at that. And I think we're trying to do it in a constructive way, which is what this podcast is great for. But people who are just kind of naysayers, and like you guys have mentioned, looking for something to hate. My question from a genuinely curious standpoint and would be in a challenge to say, well, and I've asked, well, how would you want this to end? What would you have wanted to see? What would this trilogy look like for you if it was successful? If Palpatine wasn't your villain, who would you have liked to see? And what I'm finding is a lot of people don't have those answers. And a lot of people, like Scott's actually the one that I've seen the most who has the most hey, this is what I would have liked to see, and this is what would have made this successful to me. And I think when you've got that to back it up, you're not just finding something to hate is what I would say. So I challenge people who see this, if you're finding things that you dislike or, you know, are lessening the experience for you, you know, ask yourself those questions, because you might go, okay, actually I was fine with this and it was enjoyable. I think the second thing I would say as an overall, my stance and my platform for the saga in general is what I loved about it so much, the original films, was a lot of the spiritual and philosophical undertones that I found in the original movies, and that I think Rise of Skywalker, at least for me, brought back to the forefront, especially through Rey's story. And so what this brings me to is a quote, probably my favorite quote from the entire franchise, which comes from Obi-Wan in Return of the Jedi, when he says to Luke, "Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view." And here we are. For me, this feels very full circle in 2019. And the biggest problem with this trilogy is that everyone is clinging so hard to their own points of view, to their own expectations of what they think this trilogy, this movie, these actors, these directors should have done, could have done, would have done. And they're so attached to those perspectives of being right and that their point of view is the truth. And what I think this trilogy has done is shine a light, a spotlight on a systemic cultural issue we have right now, that nobody is really able to hear anyone. They are not really able to hear what other people are saying in a constructive or self-reflective way. That there's very little listening to understand and a lot of listening to defend or demean. And that it's getting difficult to have opinions that are different without a potentially intense backlash. And I think this goes for both sides. So I think if anything, this franchise has taught me and has taught and should teach us about the potential dangers of extremes in black and white thinking, and that much of life, much like the universe, is gray. I didn't care for The Last Jedi, but I felt really pulled to ask people who loved it why they did. And not only did it give me a perspective that I missed, but it also gave me the opportunity to examine what I was perhaps attached to in this franchise. So I think if nothing else, the medicine of this trilogy is to ask and examine what are we clinging to? Hard to. And what is the impact on seeing things from other points of view?
Yeah, I think that that's extremely well stated. Ethan, follow it up.
I will do my best. Yeah, I think out of the four of us, I probably left the theater with the most criticisms and disappointments. I wouldn't say I hated it. I do not like it per se. But talking to you guys has definitely helped with that. Just being around, like, cause I am a Star Wars fan, right? You are all Star Wars fans. I want to like this movie. I want to like all the movies, and to hear reasons why people who like Star Wars like this movie is a good thing for me. And to Aaron's point, talking about Star Wars is basically like talking about politics. Like, it's as divisive, as toxic. No one's going to listen or like be willing to actually have a debate about it anymore, which is why it's not as fun to talk about it. But in this sort of setting, it's great because we get to exchange ideas and gain a new perspective. And I think when it comes to this movie, I've tried to view it through three different lenses. One as a standalone film, one as it relates to the trilogy, and one as it relates to Star Wars as a whole. And I think my biggest criticisms lie with it as a movie, as it stands alone, because as a storytelling vehicle, as I look at like some of my favorite movies and how they tell stories, this one doesn't really align with that. And I think that that's a distinction that I have to like figure out for myself, is a good movie is not necessarily a good Star Wars movie. Like, there's differences to what those are. Star Wars fans aren't always looking for like this incredible character development in the last movie of a trilogy that already has built up these characters. Mm-hmm. So I think from that perspective, that's where the weaknesses lie for me. Again, Scott's already touched on how it's pretty clear at this point that there wasn't a plan for the trilogy, or if there was, it got ripped up halfway through and they tried to pull it together and didn't 100% stick the landing. But viewing it from the perspective of it's been 42 years, there's been 11 movies, countless other entries into the culture and to the lore of this thing. Looking at it from that perspective, I think it actually did pretty well. Am I going to watch this one the most out of any of the other ones? Probably not. But I do want to go see it again now that I've talked to all of you and gained a new perspective on it.
Well, that's nice. We like that. So thank you all so much for coming along on this journey with us. I think you've heard a lot of perspectives on the movie here. We hope that this is a bit of therapy for you as well whenever you're listening to this, because it is difficult to kind of, there was, like I said, coming back to what people have been telling me so much about this film is that it is a lot. There is a lot. There is a lot in this film. So very, very happy with where it's at. Let's go around and talk a little bit about anything that we have coming up. I'll mention that for Beyond the Mouse, we are releasing a feed-only best of 2019, looking forward to 2020 episode. One of my favorite episodes we do for the year. We kind of look back and say what we're grateful for in Disney-dom in the last year. And we also look forward to say, where are we going in the future and what do we want from there? So, Aaron, I know you're going to be involved very shortly on another Full Disclosure. Do you want to talk about that for a second?
We are going to talk about all things Cats tomorrow night. The Cats trauma continues.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Scott, can you tell me about anything that's going on with flashbacks, anything that you're involved in? What do you got going on?
If you want a podcast to die, you have me hosted because I've killed three now. I don't know when this is dropping, but we are recording, Ryan and I are recording Christmas Vacation for the 30th anniversary for Flashbacks here in about 10 minutes. When it's going to drop, who knows? I may have already dropped, so I'm in the past, in the future, or whatever. But also, when I finish my dissertation, or try to, we will be bringing back Twilight Zone's Zone of Zones. We were in season 2 of our rewatch of Twilight Zones when we stopped over a year and a half ago. Brandon and I will bring it back, I promise, sooner or later. And then also Discovering Star Trek was my other podcast that died. Star Trek Picard comes out January 23rd, and we'll be bringing the podcast back for that as well, too, because we'll be watching Picard all the way through, because I hope that doesn't suck. I really hope it doesn't suck. It looks good. It looks good.
And Ethan, thanks for joining us. We really appreciated you being on, and appreciated you were able to get some of your feels out there. We were basically, the reason why you were on this podcast, we were texting, and it was funny because I was shopping with my son, and you were texting me all these thoughts about Last Jedi, and I was like, or not Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker. And then I'm just like, hey, I got my son right now. I'll text you back in a little bit. And then a full 24 hours later, you text me, and I'm like, and you're like, I'm still thinking about this movie. And I'm like, oh crap, I never went back and texted you about it. So, there was a lot in this film. Just really cool. Thank you all for talking to us. Thank you out there for listening, and make sure you go and give us a review on iTunes or your podcast platform of choice. And then you can also find us always on nprillinois.org as well. So thank you all so much. And from a galaxy far, far away, this has been Craig.
Aaron.
I didn't even swear once. It's great.
Scott. And I'm Ethan.
And we will see you real soon in the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.